Isn't it about time we told the audience when the plays are going to start?
I think we want people to know that Sonic Tales, the regular show, is starting very soon.
The blabber, slap, scream.
You're not welcome here yet.
With Tanya afire, she starts running.
Down, taken down, to hell with us.
And we're starting with brand new plays that have been recorded right here at Eastside Radio.
And lashed, and turned, and cracked.
Well, you know, if people are kind enough to give you their time and their thoughts, you've got to give them their money.
Excellent.
Writers, actors, sound designers, producers, and everyone involved in the project.
Sonic Tales Season 5 is a drawing together of multiple talents, multiple thoughts, and multiple feeling.
And these are only half-hour shows?
Some are even less.
Get home, put on the radio, listen to a play. Hi there, and thanks for joining me for this week's episode of Sonic Tales. I'm your host, Tegan Nichols, and of course today we'll be continuing on with our Four Men Only series, the series of monologues that we have been playing over the last three episodes of the season. Season 5 will be wrapping up today with the monologue Mick, performed by Christopher Dibb, who delivers a fantastic performance of this otherworldly tale about the birth of poetry. More on that soon as we meet with our producer Jill Folsom for a chat in the studio. Now, as I said, we are wrapping up Season 5 of Sonic Tales with the last play for our Men Only series. However, next season, Season 6, which will be starting in 2 weeks' time, we'll be bringing you our favourite picks. The team here at Sonic Tales have decided that we'd like to rebroadcast some of the plays that we've already played over the years, and we would also like to play you some of our favourite new productions, which have not yet gone to air. So we've got some very special things coming up for you all in the next season, which will be starting in 2 weeks' time. So before we get to our feature presentation today, which is Mick, of course, let's hear a little bit about the play from our producer, Jill Folsom. Well, first of all, can you tell us about Mick?
Well, it's about North... it's about Nordic mythology, in a way, but also about the very beginning of poetry. And Christopher Dibb, who does the voice of this Mick person, has a wonderful knowledge of that space and time, as does the writer Frank Gauntlett.
And Mick has stumbled into a pub, or maybe he's been there for a long time, we don't really know. And he's telling the story of Odin. And he's telling it, I mean, who do you think he's telling it to himself? What do you imagine when you listen to it?
I think he's stumbled into a pub and sees an audience there and is besotted with the story, completely besotted, and knows all about it. And it's almost like a preacher having to tell the story that he knows so well about the beginning of poetry. He has this urge, to give the audience this special knowledge that only he has, that time has forgotten.
Perhaps he's a travelling bard himself.
More than likely.
The road is harsh, our friends are few. The solitary way is hard, but I have fallen among fellow travellers and bring news. Good news, my rootless friends, news indeed. Be of good cheer, light in cruel darkness, hope, good grub and better beer, comfort in cold, unending night, shelter from the obligatory storm.
I mean, when you read the play, and you've spoken about how the writing of the play, because Frank Gauntlett is a bit of a wordsmith, his writing is very beautiful, but the content is also very very obscure sometimes, the content of his plays, the subjects of his plays.
And he writes so densely too.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've had to slow down the speakers so that the audience at home, which is not visual, they have to listen to it. They need to be able to hear every bit of information that is being given to them.
So in that sense, what do you think, I mean, in the information of this play that's been given to them, what relevance does a play about Norse mythology, about poetry, the beginning of poetry, what relevance does that have to our listeners, an Australian audience?
Well, you could
audience?
Say the same thing to about Game of Thrones and the television series, another one called The Vikings, which also shows how far ahead those Norse people were in education and wordsmithing, and the women were given equal rights to the men. They were very far ahead of the Christians that they belted to bits in England and in Europe. They were much more modern, and I think that comes through in the story as well, that I found that very interesting, that the whimsy of it, I think, and the denseness of it is being brought together with the knowledge of poetry being such an important oral skill that has to be... You can read poetry, but if you hear it, it's a very different thing.
Flung, full form from the inhospitable stew of coagulating time, with no formal training, Odin grew stern with the power and responsibility of his mighty burdens. God of battle, cargoes, wishes, change, poetry, wisdom, and God of the dead, with particular reference to the hanged. Odin thought much on the end of the world and ever yearned for knowledge of it. Of ragged temper, he no worries. Giants were often exploded, and great lords, blooded in the rites of power, measured their own molehills at Odin's mountains and were wont to do him homage. Bold men made sacrifice, trembled, and prayed for help and wisdom.
It's an interesting thing that Frank is doing there, particularly if you imagine the monologue performed in a public arena, in a live performance, you know, and they were performed in a pub. But I think this transfers over to radio as well. It is a vocal performance, almost a poetic performance.
Yes,
about
it is.
The beginning of poetry, the idea of using language, which, you know, was our language is functional. Our language helps us to share our ideas and to get things done and to tell people what to do and to, you know, basically make sure we don't have any misunderstandings so that, you know, we don't conflict with each other. But then all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, I'm sure it happened over time, our relationship with language progressed into a thing of beauty. No longer, for example, if you're looking at construction, you might use wood to begin with to build a shack, but then you start to use it to sculpt elephants or to in an artistic
yes.
way, and it's like another
yes.
level of language. Use, I suppose, in taking it into an artistic
and particularly realm. As our modern language has become adrift, I think. We're talking about Facebook and Twitter and people putting out very short sentences. We send short sentences on our phones to each other. We text very short, sometimes just using the capital letters or the first letters of a word. Our language is diminishing, and I think when we hear a play as dense as Mick is, it really makes you sit back. And I can imagine an audience in a pub thinking, my goodness, what have we got here? There's words that I haven't heard of for years and phrases that are contrapuntal, you could say, in a musical sense. Mm. And it's almost Shakespearean.
Yeah,
in its thing. And I've just been part of helping with a production at a school, a Clovelly school, where they used parts of Shakespearean plays for the children to do. These are primary school children. And it all had to be explained. to them. But once they got the idea of what it was, they were really enjoying it. And I think this is Mick is a symbol of how much we've lost in language, as much as anything, that we're listening to something that's as beautiful in its own way as language always used to be.
To the bloody pots the brothers put honey and slowly fermented a most remarkable mead from the meat and bones of the man of spit. The mead of poetry. To drink was to know extremity galore, and through that bring succour to us churls.
So in a way it's almost a reminder. I mean, it's a fair point that you make, that language is changing and we're texting a lot. We text more than we would call. I think most people would feel, particularly young people, would feel more comfortable sending short text messages repeatedly in a kind of chat rather than actually making a phone call. And so when we text, we're texting in abbreviations. We're texting the way that we would speak. We're not texting the way that we would write, because the way that we write, we use language in a very different way. If we're writing a letter or, you know, a proposal or an article, whatever it is. And so it's almost like we have all these different layers of language. I even remember someone saying that text message writing is almost becoming another layer of language, because it's a very different domain, because it sounds, if you read it aloud, it sounds like it's spoken, but it's a written form of language, and it's very unlike any other of our written forms of language. But the comparison with Shakespeare that you make with Mick, and it does sound otherworldly.
It does sound otherworldly, you're quite right.
Yeah, it sounds of a different time. And yet, here we are airing it in 2015. What do you think?
How do I think the audience will respond?
Well, there's a good... Yeah, how do you think the audience will respond to hearing something so unexpected?
Well, I think it will depend where they are when they're listening. Because you need to be on your own, I think, to listen to it, or in a quiet relationship with somebody who's willing to sit down and just concentrate on this. I think if you're driving in the traffic, you'd think, whoops, you wouldn't be able to give it its best. So you best listen to the podcast in that case, which they can get on iTunes. But I hope it's a reminder of the denseness and the richness of a beautiful collection of words. Because sometimes when you send to me a little message, can I come in here at 10:30 to meet you up, Tegan? I just text back, yes. Which for me would be, you'd never just get me with a one-word conversation. Yeah. I'd chatter, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
So Mick is a reminder. It is an example of, in a way you could say, not what we've lost, but what we've gained and what is still there in our language, the richness, the flourish, the...
It's like it's wonderful florid embroidery, which we don't do anymore much, but the embroidery from the past is delicious to look at, to think that somebody spent all that time making all those little stitches in all those wonderful colours and spent their life sometimes doing things like that. And I feel Mick's dialogue is a beautiful piece of word-like embroidery, if you so like that phrase. I hope you enjoy it.
And so without further ado, Sonic Tales would like to present to you Mick, written by Frank Gauntlet and performed by Christopher Dibb.
Damned and bloody universe! Bastard gravity. All the buggery. Brothers, I'm parched, well parched. Is there anything for it, anything at all? Are we fallen so far? It seems we are. The road is harsh, our friends are few. The solitary way is hard, but I have fallen among fellow travellers and bring news. Good news, my rootless friends, news indeed. Be of good cheer, light in cruel darkness, hope, good grub and better beer, comfort in cold, unending night, shelter from the obligatory storm. Flung, full form from the inhospitable stew of coagulating time, with no formal training, Odin grew stern with the power and responsibility of his mighty burdens. God of battle, cargoes, wishes, change, poetry, wisdom, and God of the dead, with particular reference to the hanged. Odin thought much on the end of the world and ever yearned for knowledge of it. Of ragged temper, he no worries. Giants were often exploded and great lords, blooded in the rites of power, measured their own molehills at Odin's mountains and were wont to do him homage. Bold men made sacrifice, trembled and prayed for help and wisdom. Grave Odin had a wondrous wife and many children, natural and not. He had a magnificent stallion, 8 legs, 8! A great throne and palace round it. Odin had 2 ravens and halls beyond compare. Greatest of these was Valhalla, devoted by Odin, god of battle, to slain warriors. War was abroad, as was essence of slain warrior, and the fierce, determined dead required a place in things. With power to resolve battles, large and small, ambitious warriors were devoted to their greatest god. In return, he gave them Valhalla. Valhalla, hall of the slain, hundreds of doors, hundreds. Through each of hundreds could hundreds pass without melee. The walls of this enormous place were built of golden proof, its soaring roof all wrought of silver spears. Well might mortals battle for Odin's favour, my brothers, when feasting in Valhalla was perpetual. There was constant biffo, but it was known that great warriors, live and dead, would be Odin's finest army of the dead when inevitable catastrophe came. These dead dined on boar, best of meats, and supplies from great tables never failed. The best of beers was an ale from the paps of a large and tireless goat called Hydrun, enough each day to satisfy each man. To select and serve Valhalla's dead, Odin chose Valkyries. These were like imaginary women and altogether wonderful. Odin often joined his lively dead. He called them sons, but little drank and took no food himself. Such lumps as he considered would fly to 2 great wolves beneath his seat at table. For the accommodation of unchosen dead, Odin made the lowest lands of ice, fire and fume their place, and for governance appointed Hel, whose body showed a right side young and fair, and a sinister shot with age and rot. Odin wandered far for wisdom. He went to the fount of Mim to drink the wisdom. He tore out an eye in payment and lost it ever in the churn. He drank the wisdom and it became part of him. Thereafter, he often dealt in ways impenetrable to humankind. When pissed or cornered, he was wont to mutter,
"A wise man's heart is seldom glad, if he is truly wise."
Early, when the gods made peace, they all spat in a pot to seal the deal. From this unique sputum, the thrifty gods moulded a man called Kvasir, and he was wondrous wise. Kvasir's wise and sober counsel was widely sought and highly valued. Kvasir came to a wild place that was home to two demented brothers who were dwarfs. There were some up near Innisfail for years. Following the dictates of their dementia, the dwarfs butchered unsuspecting Kvasir for all his wisdom, and for all his wisdom, and captured and kept his lumps and juice in pots held ready. To the bloody pots the brothers put honey and slowly fermented a most remarkable mead from the meat and bones of the man of spit. The mead of poetry. To drink was to know extremity galore, and through that bring succour to us churls. Anyway, the demented dwarfs, in an unrelated incident, drowned a leading giant and dropped a fatal whetstone on his giant wife's head. Not surprisingly, a giant son sought revenge, big sweaty lad. This lummox would have simply drowned the delinquent dwarfs, but the odious mites offered the mead to buy their miserable lives. The orphaned oaf took the brew to the heart of a storm-lashed mountain and set a giant daughter to guard his treasure. As god of poetry, Odin wanted all the mead. The mead was not for giants, so he set off to claim the mead of poetry, drink deep and hoard much as you would. For this work, Odin took disguise as a strapping young giant and straightway went to the lands of the lummox's big brother. In full fields, he found nine servants scything and endlessly sharpening wearied scythes. Strapping giant Odin beguiled the nine with a miraculous whetstone. The servants, sick of scythe and sharpening, fixed on this whetstone. Envy, ambition, fawning, cajoling, conspiracy, bickering, threats, and mindless violence waxed. Grim giant Odin stood by as nine servants slaughtered nine servants with scythes, more dull than not. Man reaping done, Odin made for the giant's corpse master and pledged to do the work of the missing nine for one full summer if he would persuade his lummox brother to grant one sip of the mead. Giant Odin did do the work of nine and worked on the mind of his supposed master, but sure enough, at the end of the work, the lummox resisted all persuasion and refused to part with one drop of the marvellous mead. Odin was not finished. Mastery of his master uncovered the mead's hiding place, and he persuaded his lord and dupe to lead them thither. And there was more humiliation for the wretched giant, his lummox brother and their line. By the mount where the precious liquor lay, dark Odin bade his giant guide wield a drill and drill the rock that held the mead. Then all that was giant Odin shivered and shimmied down. He changed into a wily snake, insinuated himself in the mountain hole and slipped into the stronghold. As form fell off and the snake slid in, some influence fell from Brother Dupe and he thrust at the stirrup with the auger, but the reptile was away and gone. Inside a hewn rock room, wily snake Odin assumed the shape of handsome giant. And you may believe, the lummox daughter guarding the mead was well surprised and glad. Here was unexpected and welcome diversion. The mead vault was remote indeed. Giant Odin stayed for 3 long nights. After 3 long nights, much under false love's sway, the lonely giantess granted one sip from each of 3 great jars in which the mead matured. One sip and one sip only. Giant Odin drained each jar in one and had the mead of poetry. Instantly, all that was him shimmered down. Odin changed to an eagle and bolted for Asgard's sanctuary. The giant girl Gull screamed. Her lummox father understood, and he too became an eagle and gave furious chase. Driving, sinew, feather, bone, and muscle diving, the birds strain and dash and demand supremacy. And in the superhuman efforts of the race, Eagle Odin pissed out precious mead on humans, raining mastery of music, speech, or movement on a fortunate few mortal lines. Just pissed it out. That's where poetry came from. The pell-mell flight was beautiful, and Odin won. The instant he landed, he puked the mead of poetry into pots sensibly provided by the other gods. Some say Odin was even more greatly inclined thereafter to impenetrable behaviour. Some say Odin was not to be trusted, for his ways were too deep. Odin sometimes said,
"The deeper he drinks, the dimmer grows the mind of many a man."
Is there nothing here of drink? Nothing of piss for me, for God's sake.
Mick, written by Frank Gauntlett, performed by Christopher Dibb. Sound design by Robbie Armfield, and produced for Eastside Radio by Jill Folsom. We hope you enjoyed Mick, the final play in our Four Men Only series, and that wraps up Sonic Tales Season 5. Sonic Tales Season 6 will be coming to you very shortly with some brand new content. But before we bring up Season 6, we at Sonic Tales would like to thank everyone involved with Season 5. Of course, writer Frank Gauntlett and our wonderful actors Nicholas Gledhill, Kim Nucky, Harley Connor and Christopher Dibb. Also a special thanks to our sound designer for all four of the plays that you've heard on Season 5, Mr. Robbie Armfield. And once again, thank you for joining us for another episode of Sonic Tales. We'll be bringing you Season 6 in 2 weeks' time with some brand new content as we share our picks, some of our favourite plays from the past, and some of our brand new favourite plays that we have produced. If you happen to miss this episode or would like to listen to it again, please listen to our podcast. You can go to eastsidefm.org and find the Sonic Tales podcast there. Or, for an easier, more convenient method, just subscribe. You can find us on iTunes. My name's Tegan Nichols, and it's been a pleasure to have you along for the ride, as always. And I look forward to your company next time for more Sonic Tales. Take care, and good night.